Okay. So today being Janmashtami, we're going to read from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, first chapter, text 4, famous verse. And then after we finish discussing that, because we have 15 minutes more for class this morning, we're going to talk about the demons in Krishna consciousness. And the demons are very interesting. Not because we like demons, but because the demons represent, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, anarthas. That means things we don't want. Maybe there are things you do want, but things I don't want. Some of you may want them, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, things like that. And so hopefully we'll have time to talk about some of the demons, because it's quite an interesting discussion. Not only which anarthas the demons represent, but their background, that is, who the demons were in their previous lives. That's a very interesting discussion. As I said, this is from the Chaitanya Shikshamrita and also the commentaries by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. But first we're going to read from the 10th canto, first chapter, text 4. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll just read the Sanskrit to this text, and then I'll read the word-by-word translations, and then the translation. So, Nivritta tarsha rupa giyamanan vabolshadashotra manoviramat kautama shloka gunanu vadat puman virajeta vina pashugnat. So you can repeat. Nivritta. Released from. Tarshahai. Lust or material activities. Upagiyamanat. Which is described or sung. Baba Aushadat. Which is the right medicine for the material disease. Ashrotra. The process of oral reception. Manaha. The subject matter of thought for the mind. Abhiramat. From the pleasing vibrations. From such glorification. Kaha. Who? Uttama shloka. Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Guna anuvat, from describing such activities. Puman, a person. Virajeta, can keep himself aloof. Vina, accept. Pashugnat, either a butcher or one who is killing his own personal existence. So translation, glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the parampara system, that is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease to hear such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. In India, it is the practice among the general populace to hear about Krishna, either from Bhagavad Gita or from Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to gain relief from the disease of repeated birth and death. Although India is now fallen, when there is a message that someone will speak about Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, thousands of people still gather to hear. This verse indicates, however, that such recitation of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam must be done by persons completely freed from material desires. Nivrittatar Shahai. Everyone within this material world, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, is full of material desires for sense enjoyment, and everyone is busy in sense gratification. But when thus engaged, one cannot fully understand the value of Krishna Katha, either in the form of Bhagavad Gita or in Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, I know that already. Thank you. If we hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from liberated persons, this hearing will certainly free us from the bondage of material activities. But hearing Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by a professional reciter cannot actually help us achieve liberation. Krishna Katha is very simple. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he himself explains, Madak parataram nanyat kinchit asti dananjaya. O Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Simply by understanding this fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become a liberated person. But especially in this age, because people are interested in hearing Srimad Bhagavad Gita from unscrupulous people who depart from the simple presentation of Bhagavad Gita and distort it for their personal satisfaction, they fail to derive the real benefit. There are big scholars, politicians, philosophers, and scientists who speak on Bhagavad Gita in their own polluted way, and people in general hear from them, being uninterested in hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from a devotee. A devotee is one who has no other motive for reciting Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than to serve the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore advised us to hear the glories of the Lord from a realized person. Bhagavata paro dhya bhagavata sthane. Unless one is personally a realized soul in the science of Krishna consciousness, a neophyte should not approach him to hear about the Lord. For this is strictly forbidden by Srila Sanatana Goswami, who quotes from the Padma Purana. Vaishnava mukho girnam putam harikatam ritam shravanam naiva kartavyam sharpo chishtong yatapayaha. One should avoid hearing from a person who is not situated in Vaishnava behavior. A Vaishnava is Nivritta Trishna. That is, he who has no material purpose, for his only purpose is to preach Krishna consciousness. So-called scholars, philosophers, and politicians exploit the importance of Bhagavad Gita by distorting its meaning for their own purposes. Therefore, this verse warns that Krishna Katha should be recited by a person who is Nivritta Trishna. Shukadev Goswami epitomizes the proper reciter for Srimad Bhagavatam and Parikshit Maharaj, who purposefully left his kingdom and family prior to meeting death, epitomizes the person fit to hear it. A qualified reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam gives the right medicine, Bhavoshadi, for the conditioned souls. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is therefore trying to train qualified preachers to recite Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita throughout the entire world, so that people in general in all parts of the world may take advantage of this movement and thus be relieved of the threefold miseries of material existence. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita and the descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam are so pleasing that almost anyone suffering from the threefold miseries of material existence will desire to hear the glories of the Lord from these books and thus benefit on the path of liberation. Two classes of men, however, will never be interested in hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam: those who are determined to commit suicide, and those determined to kill cows and other animals for the satisfaction of their own tongues. Although such persons may make a show of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam at a Bhagavata Saptaha, this is but another creation of the Karmis, who cannot derive any benefit from such a performance. The word Pashuk Naut is important in this connection. Pashuk Na means butcher. persons fond of performing ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems must offer sacrifices, yajnas, by killing animals. Lord Buddhadev therefore rejected the authority of the Vedas. What's that scratching noise? Stop. Because his mission was to stop animal sacrifices, which are recommended in the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. And then there's a quote from the Gita Govinda here. Nindasi yagya vidir aha shruti jatam sodaya hridaya darshita pashu gatam keshavadrita mura sharira jaya jagadisha hare. Even though animal sacrifices are sanctioned in Vedic ceremonies, men who kill animals for such ceremonies are considered butchers. Butchers cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness, for they are already materially allured. Their only interest lies in developing comforts for the temporary body. And there's a quote from the Bhagavad Gita, Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya pritachetasam vyavasayatmaka buddhi samado navatiyate. That's from the second chapter, text 44. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination of devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Srila Narottamadas Thakur says, Manusha janma poya Radha Krishna na bhajiya janyas sunya visha koinu. Anyone who is not Krishna conscious and therefore does not engage in the service of the Lord is also pashugna, for he is willingly drinking poison. Such a person cannot be interested in Krishna katha because he still has a desire for material sense gratification. He is not nivritta Krishna. As it is said, Trivargikaste purusha vimukha hari medasa. Those interested in trivarga, that is, in dharma, artha, and kama, are religious for the sake of achieving a material position with which to gain better facilities for sense gratification. Such persons are killing themselves by willingly keeping themselves in the cycle of birth and death. They cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna katha, topics about Krishna consciousness, there must be a speaker and hearer, both of whom can be interested in Krishna consciousness if they are no longer interested in material topics. One can actually see how this attitude automatically develops in persons who are Krishna conscious. Although the devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement are quite young men, not anymore, they no longer read materialistic newspapers, magazines, and so on, for they are no longer interested in such topics, nivrittatar shahai. They completely give up bodily understanding of life. For topics concerning Uttama Shloka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual master speaks and the disciple hears with attention. Unless both of them are free from material desires, they cannot be interested in topics of Krishna consciousness. The spiritual master and disciple do not need to understand anything more than Krishna, because simply by understanding Krishna and talking about Krishna, one becomes a perfectly learned person. Yasmin vigati sarvam evam vigatam bhavati. The Lord sits within everyone's heart, and by the grace of the Lord, the devotee receives instructions directly from the Lord himself, who says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, text 15, Sarvasya chaham ridisana vishto matak smritir gyanabhaponam cha vidai shasavera hamevavidyo vedanta krit vedavid eva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Krishna consciousness is so exalted that one who is perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the spiritual master is fully satisfied by reading Krishna katha as found in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar Vedic literatures. Since merely talking about Krishna is so pleasing, we can simply imagine how pleasing it is to render service to Krishna. When discourses on Krishna katha take place between a liberated spiritual master and his disciple, others also sometimes take advantage of hearing these topics and also benefit. These topics are the medicine to stop the repetition of birth and death. The cycle of repeated birth and death by which one takes on different bodies again and again is called bhava or bhava rog. If anyone willingly or unwillingly hears Krishna katha, his bhava rog, the disease of birth and death, will certainly stop. Therefore, Krishna katha is called bhavoshadha, the remedy to stop the repetition of birth and death. Karmis are persons attached to material sense enjoyment, generally cannot give up their material desires. But Krishna katha is such a potent medicine that if one is inclined or induced to hear Krishna kirtan, he will certainly be freed from this disease. A practical example is Dhruva Maharaj, who at the end of his tapasya was fully satisfied. When the Lord wanted to give Dhruva a benediction, Dhruva refused it. Swaman kritharto svi varam nayachi. My dear Lord, he said, I am fully satisfied. I do not ask for any benediction for material sense gratification. We actually see that even young boys and girls in this Krishna consciousness movement have given up their long practice of bad habits like illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, because Krishna consciousness is so potent that it gives them full satisfaction. They are no longer interested in material sense gratification. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So that the verse again is Nivritta Tarshar Upagiyamanas Bhavoshadot Shotra Manobiramat Kautama Shloga Gunana Vada Puman Virajeta Vada Hoshugnats. So Omagana Timurandasha Gadanjana Shalakya Chakshuna Miditam Yenitas Mai Shigurveda Mahaprabhu. So before we go on to talking about the demons, I just wanted to mention several points that are mentioned in this verse and purport. That is the prerequisites for being able to take advantage of Krishna katha. Well, one prerequisite, of course, is that one is not engaged in gross sinful activity. Pashugnat, of course, as Srila Prabhupada describes, means butcher, but it literally means he who kills the pashu or the animals. And it also means he who is a killer of the soul. There's two types of killers in this regard. One person who kills the animals, transports the animals, serves the animals, even condones the activity, raises the animals for slaughter. All these different people are considered pashugnat, as well as those, as Srila Prabhupada said, who are atheists. And atheist means, theism means godliness, and atheism means without godliness. In other words, those who are opposed to the glorification of God. And, of course, Krishna mentions this in the Gita as in his famous verse of the four types of people who don't approach Krishna. Namam duskritino mudha, prapajante naradama, mayaya pratigyana masuram bhava masrita. That's the fourth type of person, masuram bhava masrita. That means one who is asura. Asura means godly, asura means not godly. It's the opposite. Who has taken shelter in demoniac concepts. Demoniac concepts are such like, I am God, you're God, we're all God, there's no God, everything is happening by chance. These are all demoniac concepts. So those who have taken shelter in demoniac concepts like that, plus those who are killing animals or have something to do with killing animals or engage in violent activity, they will not be attracted to Krishna. They're not fit recipients of Krishna katha. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so merciful that devotees do go out and engage in sankirtan, that means chanting publicly and book distribution, to sort of trick people to engage in Krishna katha. And by doing that, by implanting the creeper of devotion in people's hearts without them knowing it, it's just like in America, there was a famous personality known as Johnny Appleseed. I don't know if any of you heard of Johnny Appleseed. No, no one's heard of Johnny Appleseed. Johnny Appleseed, I don't know if he was a real person. I mean, you read about him when you were young. But he would take all these apple seeds. That's what he's called, Johnny Appleseed. His name was Johnny. And he had truckloads of apple seeds. And he would drive his truck. No, he didn't have a truck. But he would go all over America throwing out seeds. apple seeds. And as a result of that, like I said, I don't know if it's a true story, but it's something we read when we were young. As a result of that, there were apples growing all over the place. I think those type of seeds are called volunteer seeds, where you don't actually, the person who's gardening doesn't actually plant it, somehow or other the plant comes up, it volunteers to come up. So the devotees are like that. Even if people are not interested in Krishna consciousness, then they somehow or other sneak Krishna consciousness into their hearts, either by distributing prasadam, or by distributing books, or by chanting publicly, or engaging people in service somehow or other. And that's called the planting of the bhakti lata bij. As it's stated by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Brahmande Brahmate Konna Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Vari Bhakti Lata Bij. That the living entity is wandering throughout this material world, or throughout all the material worlds, and he eventually, by the mercy of Krishna, comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master who plants the bhakti lata bij. Now, that's the other quality that's necessary. It has to be a bona fide spiritual master. Not that anyone can just plant the bhakti lata bij. Not that anyone can offer prasadam. Not that anyone can give the holy name of Krishna. I mean, people can give the reflection of the holy name if they're not Krishna God. That's called nama vash. In other words, someone can tell you to chant Hare Krishna even if they're not a devotee of Krishna. And you get some result from it. Yes, that's true. You get freed from karma. You get relieved from distress. But you don't get love of Krishna. Love of Krishna, the actual spiritual potency of love of Krishna, only comes when one is connected with Krishna. Krishna gives the prerequisite for connection. That's called parampara. Just like, the example I give many times before, just like we have a, what they call in Europe, a PowerPoint. That means a plug. In America it's called a plug, in Europe it's called a PowerPoint, in India it's called a PowerPoint too. PowerPoint means the place in the wall where you get your power from, or the plug in the wall, the electric plug. Depending on which country you're from, it's stated in different ways. So, no matter whether it's connected or not, it looks the same, doesn't it? Let's say we turn off the circuit breakers downstairs. And, of course, that means all this would go off too. But let's say nothing was plugged in the wall. Then it would look the same. It wouldn't look any different to us, would it? So in the same way, someone who is not trained properly in spiritual life, the holy name may appear the same, whether it's spoken by a great devotee or just spoken by anybody. But the potency is different. And you test the potency in the plug by plugging something in. Hopefully you don't plug your fingers into the plug. And then you get a shock. That can be compared to committing an offense against a devotee. I'm giving a metaphorical thing right now. That when you, if you approach the plug improperly, in other words, Krishna's representative, connected to cyclic succession improperly, then you get a shock. But if you approach properly, you put the male portion of the plug in, the female portion of the plug, then you get a nice computer, and you're on the internet, or whatever you're trying to do. So it's really important to understand that. First of all, it must be connected, the plug. The devotee, the person, must be connected properly in disciplines. Exactly. This is not my opinion, it's Krishna's opinion. Evam parampara praptam imam rajashayo vidahu. And also the other statement is, sampradaya vinehi mantras te nishpala mataha. That if you get your mantra from someone who is not in disciplic succession, and there's four basic disciplic successions, Brahma sampradaya, Rudra sampradaya, Kumara sampradaya, Lakshmi sampradaya, and you can actually trace out the members of the disciplic succession coming down originally from Krishna. All the disciplic successions start in Krishna. So if you get your mantra from someone who's not in disciplic succession, not only, let's say, they say they're in disciplic succession, but the qualities have to be that they're following strictly, repeating the words of their spiritual master, Samit Pani Shrutyam Brahmanishtam, then the mantra will not be spiritually effective. It just won't be imbued with the potency, even though it may be the same mantra, which is really interesting. Even though it may be the same plug in the wall, it doesn't have the Shakti in it. It's just imagination. And you could, a lot of things function according to imagination in this world, just like those of you who study hypnotism. You can convince yourself of a lot of things, right? You know, you can convince yourself this chair is a dog. An expert hypnotist can convince you the chair is a dog, and you're just like, the chair is barking. Can you do that? I've seen people do that. So you can convince yourself of a lot of things, you know, by, you know, just by belief. Like Krishna says in the Gita, what's he say? Oh, yeah, Arjuna says, ask the question, you know, what is one's religious practice if it's not done according to Shastra? Is it in goodness, passion, or ignorance? So Krishna answers, according to the mode that one is in, one develops a particular belief structure, or shraddha, according to that mode. In other words, if you're mode of ignorance, then you really, you know, you're like the ghosts and the, was it a voodoo? Like one of my disciples is a voodoo queen in New Orleans. So, and if you're in the mode of passion, you may like to worship the, you know, demons. And if you're mode of goodness, you like to worship the demigods, or you like nature, you know, you're a nature freak, or pantheism or something like that. So, according to one's mode, that, and the modes really shape, give you the faith in something. You talk about hypnotism. You know, hypnotism is not just like, look into my eyes, you're getting sleepy, but business. You got the modes hypnotizing. You know, look into my mode, you're getting ignorance. You're getting really, really ignorant. Close your eyes. Or you're getting really passionate. Go to the disco. So, anyway, so we may have faith in so many things. My previous people had faith in Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, and now they lost faith in him, and he's being overthrown at this very moment. So, anyway, so faith is a natural part of life. You got to have faith in something just to be able to exist. You have to have faith that by eating the food, you're not going to be poisoned. You're going to get nutrition. By breathing the air, you know, if I don't have faith that breathing the air is breathable, it's going to be hard for me to breathe. So, so it's not simply that someone has faith or believes in something or experiences, think they experience some sort of, you know, juice or whatever. There has to be some intellectual or, let's say, examination to see if the proper process is being followed. And Krishna gives the proper process of Parampara, Sampradaya Vinayi mantras. So the mantra must come properly. And not only come properly, it must be given by the spiritual master, just like we have our Gayatri mantras. So you can find out what the Gayatri mantras are by reading the books. But unless the spiritual master gives it to you, approves of you taking it, even though it's coming down in the simple succession, then it's not going to be effective for you. It's not that you go crazy. I remember in the early days, you were told that if you chant the Gayatri mantras without initiation, you'll lose your brain and go crazy. No. It's just that it's not going to be effective. The mantra has to be given like that. Of course, the Hare Krishna mantra is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives, but one must hear it, Prabhupada said, this is a direct quote, from the lips of a pure devotee to have effect. And that's why we go preaching in India. You know, sometimes people ask, why do you have to preach in India? Everybody already knows about Krishna. Especially, you know, we're preaching in Vrindavan. Why do we have to preach in Vrindavan? Everybody's Krishna conscious there anyway. Why do we have to preach in Govardhan? Everyone's circumambulating Govardhan Hill, chanting, you know, Radhe, 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 Radhe Sham. Because it is our duty to connect them to the Shudanam, which only comes in disciplic succession. You know, even though people are chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, Govinda Jai Jai, Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Raghupati, Raghupati. Rajaram, which is wonderful. But they won't achieve pure devotional service unless they're connected to the disciplic succession properly. This is a really important point. And we can also disconnect ourselves from the disciplic succession if we disobey the order of the acharyas. Like all of us, at least those of us who are initiated, we're connected with Srila Prabhupada, his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada has given very, very specific instructions for us. And that keeps us, allows us to transmit the Shakti to others. But if we don't do that, if we disconnect ourselves in some way, and I don't want to get specific about it because there's many ways you can disconnect yourself, apart even from breaking the regulated principles, then you just won't have the potency to bring people to Krishna, to implant the bhakti lata bija. So, anyway, so these are the prerequisites for the transmission of spiritually potent sound vibration, for having people get attracted to Krishna Katha, for people loving Krishna. And once you love Krishna, then you will do so many things. You'll execute austerities, you'll surrender your life to Krishna. That's love. You know, without love, everything's business exchange, right? Even yogic austerity is a business exchange because it's done for me. You know, I want to be peaceful. I want to get powers, the Ashta cities. I want to become smaller than the smallest, heavier than the heaviest. That would be interesting. You wrestling someone and say, I have this heavier than the heaviest city. You can't touch me. Yeah, sometimes devotees exhibited that. You know, devotees naturally have all those powers. Like Madhvacharya, a great devotee, he was wrestling with his, or challenged this big, big, humongous wrestler to a match. And he just said to the wrestler, if you can move my big toe, then you win. So, because Madhvacharya had these mystic powers, so, which automatically follow a devotee, this wrestler couldn't even move the big toe of Madhvacharya. Couldn't even move it 1 centimeter because he had these mystic powers. Anyway, so the mystic powers come normally to a devotee, but he doesn't exhibit them because generally, unless it's to be helpful for preaching, you know, if you can walk on water, I guess it would attract people. So, so sometimes, if it's helpful, he'll do it. Like Madhvacharya did it, Lord Jesus Christ did it. But normally, you know, they keep them hidden because people will take things cheaply. You know, there's like in the 1960s or something, there was advertisement that if you join this particular society, you can learn how to levitate. You just have to pay, well, it was $35 in the beginning, and then it became $135 after a lot of people were interested in it. So... So anyway, that's why devotees generally don't exhibit, because it cheapens things. You know, if you do some mystic thing, you know, if I, because I can't do any of those things, but let's say I was sitting here and I could just produce gold at $1,800 an ounce, I'd be a very popular guru, right? Pretty good. And so then it would attract cheap followers. That's just cheap stuff. You know, gold or ashes or, you know, floating, like it float in the air or something like that. What is the use? Because Prabhupada said the real magic, well, this is an interesting quote referring back to the 60s, is hippies to happies. You know, they're transforming the heart of people. Because if people follow you, you have engagements, all sorts of whatever activities, and their hearts don't become changed. Shama Avi Kevalam, what is the use? That's what the Bhagavatam says. That you may engage in so many spiritual activities or austerities, and if your heart doesn't become changed by becoming super attracted to Krishna's pastimes. In other words, if you don't experience ecstasy each time you hear the name Krishna, you feel shivering on your body. Each time you hear about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan or Ramchandra's pastimes, then you're simply just spinning your wheels. It's like sometimes many years ago when we first started the temple, there was a lot of mud here. And the cars would regularly get stuck in the mud. And so you just push the accelerator down. What would happen? The wheels would just spin. And that's before they had front-wheel drive cars. We just had rear-wheel drive cars. Front-wheel drive cars are better. So, and then the more they spin, guess what happens? What happens? It digs yourself further in the ditch. That's the interesting thing. So you're just spinning, and not going anywhere. Or like when I was young, we had a hamster. Everybody knows what a hamster is? And then my hamster was in a cage in a wheel, and all night long, and I know that, it was squeaking all night long. All night long, the hamster was running around. But it was in the same place the next morning. This poor hamster. Finally, we put oil on the wheel. It didn't squeak so much. So, try that. Get a hamster. So the point is that the one actually has to connect in the right way to make tangible spiritual progress. And the measure of your tangible spiritual progress is that you're experiencing detachment from this world. And detachment from this world is not simply like the gross level. You know, that's easier to detach from the tongue, the belly, genitals, and stuff like that. But the mind, anger, and words is heavier, harder. Isn't it Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udum Pashta Vegam? It's one thing, you know, you control the eating process, okay, no more. That's hard, I know. It's another thing you can control the other external things, you know, all right, I'm not going to drink intoxication or liquor anymore, I'm not going to smoke whatever I smoked, I'm not going to eat this. You know, that's good. But to control the mind, the anger, especially if one's insulted or something like that. I mean, so these are signs that one is actually advancing a devotional service. That one is not overcome by illusion because of the mental gymnastics his mind is undergoing. One doesn't become morose because, you know, things are not functioning according to his or her plans. Just like I was reading the other day a news report. I actually promise we don't read the news, but sometimes I read the news just to give examples in class. So I was reading a news report that some woman got criticized and then she committed suicide. Just little criticism, hardly anything, but she was so attached to what her reputation and everything like that. She committed suicide. So we're very attached to different things in this world. Actually, I've seen, especially like in Indian culture, there's attachment to reputation, isn't it? What if people think this about me? What if people think that about me? But you have someone who was born in India, Lord Rishabhadev. You know Lord Rishabhadev? He just acted like a complete fool so that everyone would think badly of him. You know the story? He did this Jada Yoga so he could become detached. We don't advise that. We don't advise that you should be crazy, walk around naked, so people, you know, we shouldn't be interested in reputation, but we shouldn't be so wild about getting rid of our reputation. So he did this, and he was completely aloof. You know, people would defecate in front of him, throw things at him, make fun of him, children would run after him. Even Shukadeva Goswami is described like that, until he began to speak about Krishna, or another story of Jadvarata. Same thing. Jadvarta acted like dumb so that people wouldn't engage him in material activities. He was so detached that when his father, he knew better because he had learned from his past two births. As Bharat Maharaj previously was a deer in the previous life too. So he was so detached or so much determined not to get entangled in this world that his father would try to show him how to chant on the Brahman thread in the Gayatri, and he never learned. His father took like months, and it never even stuck with him. It's an interesting story. Srila Prabhupada one time was giving Gayatri mantra to someone, and he was trying to teach someone how to count on the fingers, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And after about 20 tribes, Prabhupada said, you're not a Brahmin, you're a Shudra, because he couldn't figure out how to count. So, it's pretty embarrassing in front of one spiritual master. So Jatabharata did the same thing, but for months. And, you know, instead of cleaning himself at the proper time, he cleaned himself at the wrong time, and he was just like that, just trying to get rid of this attachment to prophet adoration, distinction. So reputation, yeah. So detachment means we're detached from reputation, we're detached from whether people like us or don't like us. It's just, we're just, because why? We have an internal life. It's not that it's, we're just like biting the bullet. Like, biting the bullet is an expression that comes from the wartime before they had anesthesia. You know that? Like George Washington. Everybody knows George Washington? He's the father of our country. So George Washington was hit by a bullet during the Revolutionary War. Do you know the story? And they have to take the bullet out. And so that's pretty hard. You ever go to a dentist without anesthesia? Well, that's something like taking a bullet out without anesthesia, cutting into your skin. And he didn't have a good hypnotist there. So he had to, they took a bullet and they put it between his teeth. And that's, you know, that, and then you really like clench down on the bullet. And then, you know, as you're cutting out the bullet inside the body. So that's why, where the expression biting the bullet comes from. So a devotee is not simply biting the bullet. In other words, just clenching his teeth as he's having to undergo all these austerities. A devotee is his internal life, his internal relationship with Krishna, where the, as we mentioned last night, the spiritual television of Krishna's pastimes are circulating within his heart. You know, as a person, you may think he's undergoing great austerities, but he's just watching television. 24 hours a day. Can you imagine that? You know, he's watching television, you know, you think, oh, well, he's not interested in eating. He's so austere. No, he's not austere. He's just watching Lord Ram attack Ravana right now. And tomorrow night he'll be watching another, you know, Krishna dancing with the gopis. And so he's just like, has his eyes closed, not interested in eating, with a big smile on his face. And you're thinking, you know, either he's crazy or something's happening here. So the advanced spiritualists sometimes appear very crazy. Similar sometimes to people in the mode of ignorance. Sometimes externally you can't judge the difference. Anyway, so that's really the product, the vairagya. The vairagya means without passion or without attachment to things in this world. And then, of course, vidya, you know, knowledge. Vairagya, vidya, nidya, bhakti, yoga. So these are symptoms that one is progressing spiritually. One just becomes detached. Okay. So enough of that. So let's talk about the demons. Enough preaching. So the demons are very interesting personalities because they actually did exist too. It's not that they're just metaphorical. It's not, you know, some people say, well, Krishna's pastimes and all these activities, it's just a metaphor. Who's it? Dr. Radhakrishna said, you know, it's not to the Krishna you have to surrender when he was giving a commentary on that verse, Manmana Bhavan Makbhakto. It's to the unborn beginningless. You know, whatever that means. The unborn beginningless. Ooh, it sounds really wild. Krishna is the unborn. And Krishna is the source. Aham Sarvasya Prabhupada Sarvam Pravartate. I'm the source of everything. Everything is resting on me. Just like pearls are strung on a thread. Just like you see the pearls. I don't have any pearls. But, what? No, garland, you can see the thread. But if pearls are strung properly, you can't see the thread underneath. But the thread is holding them all together. In the same way, people who don't understand things just see the pearls or just see the energy, and they don't see the energetic. Krishna is Shakti Mam, and the pearls are the energy, the Shaktis. So we have to see underneath. It takes spiritual vision, shashi chakshus, to see that. So anyway, so Krishna's pastimes are not just like a metaphor to help us understand the higher truths. The higher truth, the higher truth is Krishna. And the pastimes also illustrate certain metaphorical points. I mean, there are certain metaphorical stories in the Vedic literatures that are not real. Like the Puranjana story that we're reading right now in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. Puranjana basically means every man. Puranjana. So the person in the city, you know, basically. And the city is the body, Navadware Pure Dehi, the body of nine gates. So Puranjana is every person, or let's not say every man, every person, just to be equal. So Puranjana is a metaphorical story. You're not going to run into someone named Puranjana unless Prabhupada gave him that name. Prabhupada did initiate someone with the name Puranjana. He was one of my good friends. I used to work with him in the BBT. What's your name? Puranjana Das. Every man Das. So anyway. Yeah, Prabhupada gave that name. Prabhupada had a sense of humor sometimes with the name. So that's a metaphorical story. But the pastimes of Krishna are not metaphorical stories, although there are metaphorical lessons we can learn from the stories. Got it? That's really important to understand. So when we have this discussion about the demons. Okay. So now we're going to start talking about the various demons, beginning with after the appearance of Krishna. And many of the demons were friends, because demons is the way Prabhupada said demons. That's why I pronounced it like that. So many of the demons were friends or associates or employees of Kamsa. And many of them were just like independent demons. They weren't employed, you know. They were just like, that was their nature. They just did it because they liked it. Others did it because they liked it and they got paid for it. And others did it because they liked it, got paid for it, and were threatened if they didn't do it, they'd be in trouble. So there's various reasons demons did things. Okay. So the first demon is interesting, and Krishna shows that he is not a sexist, because the first demon Krishna killed was a lady demon. It was interesting. And that demon, the first demon, of course, that Lord Ramchandra killed was a lady demon too. Tataka. Tataka was previously a very beautiful lady, but she had been cursed to become demoness. And she was eating all the sages. She had a garland of skulls around her neck. And it's interesting, demons become more powerful when it becomes the twilight hours at night. The nighttime. That's why if you're fighting demons, you do it during the day. Don't do it at night. They become more powerful, much more harder to fight at night.
They're getting messed with.
Yeah. So at night, so Lord Ramchandra, when he was killing Tataka, or attacking Tataka, he was told by Vishwamitra Muni, kill her now before it becomes twilight, because it'll be very difficult to kill her then. All right, so let's talk about the first demon, who is Putana. That means the lady with the poison, Put. So anyway, so Putana was sent by Kamsa, because Kamsa had heard that from Yogamaya. Remember the story last night? You heard from Yogamaya that the person who was supposed to kill him was already born in Gokul. So Kamsa called for Putana to come and kill Krishna and actually kill all the children that were just recently born in Vrindavan. So she flew to Vrindavan and she smeared poison on her breast and she started to suck all the newborn children in Vrindavan. And actually some of the children died before she reached Krishna. And eventually, we know the story, is she got to Krishna, and she assumed a form. This is a very important point. She assumes in a completely gorgeous form because she was Rakshasini. A Rakshasi. Both the same thing. They have the ability to change their form. Like Surpanaka. She had long nails like a tigress, or tiger, like this long. That's what Surpanaka. Naka means nails. And she changed herself into some beautiful girl, and she said to Lord Ramchandra, hi. Or whatever girls say. Putana, she changed herself into a beautiful girl. And the residents of Vrindavan thought that she's some demigoddess coming down. Wow. And so, naturally, when you see someone handsome, beautiful, you let your guard down, don't you? You think, how could there be anything wrong with this person? Like if you see Arnold Schwarzenegger walk in, you know, how can... I know. Anyway. So, if you see someone very handsome, I mean, you tend to trust them even if they happen to be idiots. And you see that in politics, too. That if a politician is very handsome and attracts people, then they vote for him. I mean, Kennedy was like that. I'm not commenting on Kennedy's quality, other qualities, but just because he was handsome, you're just like, wow, he's definitely qualified to be president of the United States. So you see that people are just enamored. Of course, in Vrindavan, they're not enamored by external beauty, but under the influence of Yogamaya, they appear to be bewildered by these things. We don't need Yogamaya to be bewildered. We have the Mahamaya. So I think we have a few more minutes, right? Yeah, I'm just doing the offering now, 15 more minutes. So the residents of Vrindavan thought she's so nice. And she came in, and they let her pick up Krishna, little baby Krishna. And she put Krishna to her breast. And Krishna closed his eyes for various reasons. One is, you know, he doesn't like it so much when he has to kill a lady. And another one is that there was something being dictated to Putana, you know, some spiritual thing. And so, and then he sucked her life air out. And after he sucked her life air out, she grew to her normal size, which is like 8 miles long. And fortunately, you know, she fell outside of the village, or else she would have crushed everybody in the village at the same time. And then Krishna was found climbing on top of her, you know, mountainous body. And the residents of Vrindavan were very happy that Krishna had been saved. So, here's the story about Putana. Putana is... represents the pseudo-guru. He looks like a guru, walks like a guru, talks like a guru, but he ain't. Why is that? It's like wolf in sheep's clothing. Like, wolf in sheep's clothing puts on the... You've seen this cartoon, I'm sure. Puts on the clothes of the sheep. Bah, bah. But then he goes and eats the sheep. Right? That's why a wolf puts on sheep's clothing. So in the same way, the pseudo-guru, you have to be very intelligent, not just sentimental, to be able to discern. There's a disciplic succession, following a spiritual master, repeating the words in the shastra, guru sadhu shastra. You know, there's all sorts of qualities that one has to be able to ascertain. So Putana represents the pseudo-guru, but also she represents another type of guru that we've all accepted, which is our mind, the conditioned soul's mind. And here's the quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The pseudo-guru will teach bogus things to the students like, listen to this, liberation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur considered that bogus to teach liberation. Material sense gratification. Also institutions like religious institutions that teach atheism or materialism. And nowadays we see this many times in religious societies. They teach that the success in spiritual life is becoming successful materially, right? You ever heard about that before? When I was young, there was this one group, and they would chant this mantra, Nam-myoho Renge-kyo. And every week they would visit with each other and talk about what they had acquired that week.
They said, I've been chanting this mantra all week long, and this week I got a new BMW. And this week I got a new wife. And this week I, you know, so they would meet with each other and encourage each other. I mean, it's so gross. But in the 1960s, there were so many amazing groups going on. It was like a potpourri. It was just like a smorgasbord of spiritual life, or pseudo-spiritual life, as the case may be. So that's the milieu that I was brought up in. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur talks about this. He says, many times religious institutions mark the close of dynamic, real spiritual life. That's heavy, isn't it? Many times, because religious institutions, even they may start off as being bona fide, if they become too stratified, or if the people are not following strictly, or they forget the founder acharya's instructions and don't follow, then they mark the close of dynamic, real spiritual life. Interesting. Actually, Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur said, never in the history of religious institutions has there been a religious institution that has not destroyed the real spiritual life or the dynamic of real spiritual life. So we have that challenge in ISKCON to do that. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur says they may even teach about the amelioration of the material state. They may even teach about becoming liberated, in other words. The bona fide teacher of the Absolute heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. And this is very important, because this also reflects Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, what do you call the cutting technique, which his own disciples, many of them, criticizing for that. You know, just like going up to the Mayavadis and saying, you know, what are you teaching this nonsense for? Why you wear, if you think everything is one, he would take them by the scruff of their neck, you know, not the scruff of the neck, but the shirt, collar, and he would hold them up and he said, you know, if you think everything is one, why not just wear a ball of cotton instead of wearing this shirt? And therefore he was known as Nisringa Guru. And Srila Prabhupada also preached very strongly, uncompromising campaign against untruth. Okay. So here's more stuff about Putana. This is from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. As soon as the transcendental child is born, that means as soon as we become interested in spiritual life, sometimes, he falls into the hands of Putana, the pseudo-teachers of religion. The attempted success of Putana over genuine spiritual teachers is aided by the efforts of organized religion, which is atheism in the garb of theism. These are very heavy statements, if you listen to them. Organized religion is an attempt to force the people in general to follow certain religious principles without affecting any spiritual advancement in them, and so is doomed to failure. Let me unpack that for a second. What he's saying is that generally in organized religion, you're forced to believe in something or practice something because of either threats, you're going to what? Hell. Or because of some allurement. If you do this, you will get to go to heaven and meet so many celestial virgins there. Things like that, right? So, it's gross. Gross for you. So that's what, when you institutionalize religion, that's what generally happens. You follow because you have to follow. It's no longer coming from the heart. Before religion becomes organized, it's more from the heart, isn't it? It's spontaneous. You know, I want to do this. I'm really attracted to Krishna consciousness. Fortunately, we're not organized in ISKCON, so it's not a problem. But like people ask me sometimes on the street, they say, I'm not interested in organized religion. I said, you'll be real interested in ISKCON then. Because we're definitely not organized. We're tempting. So, but organized religion per se is not against religion, but it's the dynamics that most of the times occur in organized religion, such as doing things because of promise of some material allurement, position, prestige, or the threat if you don't do it, I'm Krishna's representative. If you don't listen to me, guess what? You will not get Krishna consciousness. Everyone, no one comes to Krishna except through me. I am the temple representative of GBC. I'm the way, the truth, and the light. I've seen that in temple leaders sometimes, even within ISKCON society. I'm not saying no one here demonstrates that, but I've actually seen that. So that's what organized religion means. Not that it's wrong to be organized, but that aspect of organized religion where you're afraid or greedy, you're impelled by those two things. So Krishna consciousness has to come from the heart. So that's how it destroys. And Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says this is doomed to failure, this organized aspect of organized religion. He says they would like to improve materialism through their religion and so enlist the aid of putanas. Putanas are people who act like your friend, but they're actually not your friend. That's the point. That's really what putana is. Not just that she's a lady. You know, it's not a comment on ladies in particular. It's a comment on wolves in sheep's clothing. People have a particular position, whether it's guru, GBC, temple president, whatever, but they're actually interested in their own self-aggrandizement rather than your spiritual advancement. But putana cannot be successful once real religion has actually appeared. In fact, she is destroyed at the earliest point in its development. The would-be slayer is herself slain. In other words, putana becomes destroyed. This is the reward of the negative service that the putanas unwillingly or unwittingly render to the cause of theism by strangling all hypocritical demonstrations against their own hypocrisy. I should definitely unpack that. So they're hypocritical, but they're so blatant about it that it causes people to understand what hypocrisy is. And so it gives you a visible target. You understand that? It's really obvious what it is. If you take shelter of the proper spiritual predecessor, you can see, like taking shelter of the prophet, I have seen, you know, whatever sense of discrimination I see is because of, you know, Prabhupada's teaching. Understanding, coming in contact with Prabhupada, he gives us a great sense of discrimination. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur concludes by saying the effective silencing of the whole race of pseudo-teachers of religion is the first clear indication of the appearance of the absolute on the mundane plane. I think that's easy to understand. The bona fide teacher, the absolute, heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. And people, we get criticized for that all the time. You know, why are you criticizing? But it's very important. Just like if you go in a hospital, you know, they'll give you a cure, but they also have to give you an antiseptic environment, too. They have to get rid of the germs. You know, why are you washing your hands, doctor? Just give me the medicine, right? No, but first, before you give the medicine, you have to have a clean needle. I was in India one time, and they asked me, do you want a used needle or a new needle? Yeah, seriously, I'm not just making this up. I was in the hospital, had an accident, and I said, how much does a new needle cost? I said, it doesn't matter, I will pay for it. And so they gave me a new needle. So, you know, cleanliness is important, too, in healthiness. So it's also important to reveal what is bad as when you also reveal what is good. It's very important. Because you can't become clean until you get rid of the dirt. You can take all your Ajax and you want on the dirt, but it's not you know, Ajax. Anyway. So according to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, this is from Bhakti Vinod Thakur again, in her last life, Putana was Ratna Mala. That is the younger sister of Bali Maharaj. I'll tell that story. So what happened is that Bali Maharaj, he conquered over Indra's kingdom. So Bali Maharaj had a sister, Ratna Mala, And Krishna had a plan to take back the kingdom, because Krishna was the brother of Indra,
as Lord Vamanadev.
So Krishna appeared as Lord Vamanadev. So cute. Just like you showed that picture yesterday, Balaram in the womb. All the ladies are going,
because it was so cute. What? Oh, you're going,
yeah, it was actually a cute picture. So Lord Vamana, he was very attractive because he's Krishna, very cute. So when this Ratna Mala saw Lord Vamana, she got so attracted, she felt motherly affection because he was young Brahman. And she thought, oh, I really want to have him as a son. Ooh, I wish he was my son. And so she was just feeling so much, the love was overflowing from her heart. But then Lord Vamana did something tricky. He asked for 3 steps of land from Bali Maharaj. And with those 3 steps of land that he eventually got, he was able to take away everything and even push Bali Maharaj down to the netherworlds, because that was the 3rd step. Lord Vamana's step on Bali Maharaj's head. He was able to push him down to the netherworlds. So Ratnamala, Bali Maharaj's sister, having natural affinity for her brother, got angry at Lord Vamana. And she said, before I thought he should be my son, but now I'm not going to give up that original desire. But if he becomes my son, I want to kill him. What's it called? Infanticide, right? Infanticide. So you see that sometimes. It's a mixed motive, you know. I love him, I want to kill him. So what happened is, because of that desire, she took birth as Putana. And she got the opportunity to attempt to kill Krishna. And Krishna was so kind, this is another point. Krishna was so kind that he transformed Putana's desires, made purified them, because he took the good part and ignored the bad part. That's another important concept that we should understand as far as ourselves, that Krishna sees the good in us. So he took the good part, that she wanted to become Krishna's mother, and then he brought her to the spiritual world, which became Krishna's mother. It's not true. So even the demons have hope. Like Prabhupada said, if you have to hate someone, hate Krishna. In that way, you'll somehow become purified eventually. Hopefully. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to the mind, grace, to the Prabhupada, 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 to the